You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast. It is Thursday, February 7th, 2019, and I'm your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. Thanks so much for joining us today. On our podcast, we try and do one mailbag show a week where we take questions from listeners, and usually we do it on Thursday. Today is Thursday, so we will do our mailbag. Our first question was emailed to me. Based on Maccagnan's four drafts, why would anybody want to trade back for more picks? It seems like his only success has come at the top of the first round. If the Jets stay at three, at least they get one good player. I understand where you're coming from on that, because you look at the draft record outside the top six, and it has not been stellar. And even in the top six, I mean, I'm not sure you can declare it as successful as people want to at this point, because right now Leonard Williams is maybe looking not as great as you thought he was going to be. Adams looks good, but Sam, everybody thinks the sky's the limit for Sam, but Sam's only 1 year in, so even, you know, in the top six, jury's still kind of out. And then after his picks outside the top six have not been great. But, I mean, here's the thing. If we're just going to work under the assumption that Maccagnan will blow every pick outside the top six, I don't even know that there's a point of this franchise continuing to field the team. You know, I mean, I understand the skepticism with Maccagnan. I'm very down on the guy myself, but the Jets have decided to keep him, which means the Jets have to proceed as though they're going to hit on picks. I mean, the Jets did not keep Maccagnan because they think he's going to blow every pick. They think he's going to make some good moves. And you look at the way this roster is constructed, Jets are in need of talent at a lot of different places. So I think that they have to try and look to trade down. Sometimes these things are easier said than done, but I really think they need to get out of this pick and stockpile more picks. And here's the other counter to the argument that he misses picks outside the first round. Okay, well, if you have a GM who's not good at making picks, then you want him to get as many chances as he can get, because that raises the odds of him hitting on a pick. An example let me give you is, I don't think anybody thinks John Idzik was a great drafter during his tenure with the Jets as general manager, although it was a brief tenure. In 2014, he had four picks in round six, and there are not many great picks among those, but he did find Quincy Enunwa. So you give John Idzik four sixth rounders, and he'll find a Quincy Enunwa in that mix. So you want to give Maccagnan as many chances as you can, but more than that, this team just needs so much that they need to look to add as many young talented players as they can. And again, the team can't operate with the assumption Maccagnan's going to whiff on every pick, because, you know, why did you keep him to begin with? So I understand the question, but I mean, at the end of the day, if you can only hit in the top six, I mean, if you're assuming you can only hit in the top six, if you're the Jets, you might as well just shut down the operation, because you need to be able to do better than that. If you only get one good player out of a draft, it's honestly not that great of a draft class. Next question, John. It seems to me that even if the Jets spent the exorbitant amount of money to get Le'Veon Bell, there's no assurance he'd perform well with the current offensive line. If you look at Indianapolis and the other playoff teams this year, it's apparent a solid/above-average offensive line can make decent backs look good and very good backs look great. I realize the Jets need upgraded skill positions on both offense and defense, but I feel strongly the focus should be on upgrading the lines first. Your thoughts? Well, I don't disagree with you that the lines need work, but I don't think these two things are mutually exclusive. I think the Jets also need to upgrade their skill positions, and yes, a good line makes an average back look good. Good back look great. I agree with that. But a good back can also make an average line look good or a good line look great. I think back to Seattle. Not like Marshawn Lynch during the Seahawks glory days. He was running behind a great line. It was honestly a pretty bad offensive line that they had in Seattle. They did not have a great offensive line coach at that point. He was not running behind a fortress. Think about Barkley with the Giants last year. The Giants were known last year for their struggles. Saquon Barkley had a rookie of the year season. So, a good back can also make things happen. He can make guys miss. He can read, you know, he can read his blocks in front of him. And that's what Le'Veon Bell's really good at doing. And I think a back like Bell might actually be more beneficial to a team like the Jets than he would be to a team with a better offensive line, because Bell's as good as anybody as reading his blocks, waiting for the holes, anticipating where the holes are going to open. And sometimes running effectively doesn't mean that you're waiting for the guys in front of you to blow the other defensive lineman 2 yards back. Sometimes you just read the angles and you say, okay, well, even if my lineman's got beat, if I run this way, suddenly his leverage is better. You know, if he's he may have been beaten to the inside, but if I run outside, suddenly that the defender is sealed. So I think that you know, that's something to consider. Bell is just I think he would make life a lot easier on Sam. And again, it's not mutually exclusive. I mean, the Jets have to get better in both areas. I wouldn't be inclined to agree that of the two, my bigger priority would be the offensive line. But I think up there with that, I think once we get past Le'Veon Bell, I probably would prioritize the line. But I think that Bell's just has the potential to be such a difference maker with this team. And he does, as we talked about the other day, he does come with some degree of risk. It's not an absolute grand slam type signing. But I think that the Jets need just better players all around on offense. And, you know, as we've talked about on this show, the Jets have some offensive linemen who, when cut, this cap savings will go a long way towards paying for the first year of a replacement. So it's not even just that the Jets have, you know, $95-100 million, whatever it's going to be under the cap. It's that they can create even more space by cutting offensive linemen once the replacements are signed. The Spencer Long signing alone, the Jets are going to have to sign somebody to replace Spencer Long, but that $6.5 million can be dedicated directly toward Spencer Long's replacement. And then Le'Veon Bell, you know, you don't need to pass on Le'Veon Bell just to get Spencer Long's replacement. Same in theory could be true of Beecham. It could be true of Winters. So I get the argument, but the Jets are in a position where hopefully they'll be able to add both skill and help up front. And I agree with you. Up front's a priority, but the Jets also need some playmakers on this offense. This is an offense that essentially needs a makeover outside of a quarterback and, you know, a few pieces that are okay. Outside of that, pretty much everything's got to be fixed. Our next question: can the Jets get 4 starters in the draft this year? Assume pick number 3 is traded for a lower first and second. 4 players in the first 100 taken. Maybe this should be max acid test. Be gone if you can't get these 4 picks right. Well, look, you know, if we're talking about can the Jets get 4 starters, that 4, you know, high-end starters, high-quality starters in one draft, I mean, that would be an all-time great draft for the franchise. That'd be one of the great drafts in recent NFL history. It's really tough to do that, to get 4 high-end starters. The other thing about that is, you know, if we're judging Maccagnan, we don't really know the quality of a draft class until a few years out from it. I mean, if you go back to that 2015 draft class, after those guys were rookies, after their rookie years, there were a lot of high expectations for them because you had Leonard Williams, who played well as a rookie. You had Maldon, who flashed a little bit as a rookie. Even Devin Smith gave you a sign here or there near the end of his rookie year before he got hurt. I mean, you know, maybe he could do something. Petty was an unknown at that point. You had a few late round developmental guys you were hoping would develop. So, you know, you don't really know a year out unless it's like a stellar draft. Unless it's like the class the Saints had in 2017, where you get guys who step in and immediately play great. And if you have one of those drafts, you have like one of those grand slam drafts where you have multiple guys stepping in, playing great as rookies, playing, you know, top notch at their positions. I mean, that's the type of thing that can turn you into a Super Bowl contender overnight. And honestly, it probably is the type of thing the Jets need, but I don't know that that's something you can count on. I don't know you can ever count on having an all-time great draft. I don't care who your GM is. And obviously with the Jets, the GM's not been so great at drafting. So it would be great if the Jets could do it. The Jets might need it in order to get themselves back into contention this coming year, but it's tough to depend on. Now, the one thing I will say is when you've drafted as poorly as the Jets, it's not just that you've been bad at drafting. It's also you've had bad luck. So maybe the Jets will run into one of these classes where they do a good job scouting and then they get good luck. So, you know, maybe they're due a little bit, but I think it's a tough thing to ask for. I think it's 4 starters, especially if we're talking 4 starters year one. I mean, once you get past round 2, anything you get from a rookie tends to be a bonus. You don't really get it. I always get the response, well, how about this guy who was great this year? And my reply to that is always, okay, look through the list of players who were drafted round 3, round 4 this year. Notice how that guy stands out, because he's one of the few guys who actually produced as a rookie. So, I think it's tough to ask for. Next question is about the slot corner position. Assuming the Buster Screen era has drawn to a close, how would you want to see the Jets address this position? A lot of fans had been clamoring for Perry Nickerson, a guy with great physical tools, but nonetheless a sixth rounder who struggled in limited action and had not played the slot before. Would you want to see them bring in a free agent, or would it be best to try to find one in the draft? Really good question there, and as always, it depends on what's available, what the prices are, who's there in the draft. But I think if all things are equal, and that's you're asking for a legitimate answer. You don't want me to just say, oh, well, it depends on what's there. You want like an actual question. So we'll assume all things are equal. And I think there are certain positions in this league where you just have to develop from within, and you have to find a guy in late rounds who is going to be on a cheap deal. There's a certain position where you have to be able to do that. And to me, slot corner is one of those positions because it's not really a premium spot. So you're not you typically don't pay guys big money in that position. And you typically don't use premium draft picks on that. I talk a lot about how one of the cornerstone positions in this league is the cornerback position, but there's almost like two different corner, but there are almost two different positions at corner. There's the outside guy, which is the premium position where you line up against the best receivers in the league. And essentially the outside guys have the benefit of being able to push the receiver they're covering to the sideline and kind of limit the space the other receivers have. Whereas the slot corner plays in the middle of the field. So he has to be able to break in either direction, be able to read the route the receiver is running and be explosive. You need short area speed because you don't have the benefit of the sideline. The receiver could break either way, and that's why you hear about how slot corners need to be quicker. They need to have great short area speed. They don't necessarily need to be really fast running step for step for 40 yards, but they need good short area because they need to be able to explode when the receiver breaks outside left or right. And if you listen to that description, it almost sounds like the slot corner position is more difficult to play, and it might be. But the thing is, most of the great receivers spend the bulk of their time in this league on the outside, which is why the outside corner at this point, the way the NFL is built, is more of a premium position. So at a less premium position like slot corner, you need to develop a guy from inside. And Nickerson did not look great. I think it's fair to say Nickerson did not look great as a rookie, but if we're talking about we're drafting a slot corner, you're probably not going to do it round 1, round 2, maybe not even round 3. So then you're talking about a rookie who's day 3 probably, and you can't expect, like we just said, you can't expect a day 3 rookies, which means Nickerson's going to have to be the guy. I feel like it's possible the Jets go out and sign somebody, but I think that this is one of those positions the Jets are going to hope they can fill with within. And again, it's a league with a salary cap, and even when you have as much money under the cap as the Jets do, you're not going to be able to fill every position. You need cheap young guys to emerge. You need cheap young guys you drafted to emerge, and some of those guys are going to have to be later round picks, because you only get one first round pick every year. You only get one second. And the Jets did not even have a second round pick last year. Only get one third round pick every year. So that means you can't fill your roster with just top draft picks. So you need guys in less premium positions to step up who are lower round draft picks. So that's kind of where if a good slot corner presents himself and it's a deal that makes sense, it's affordable, then I would not let Nickerson prevent me from making that deal. But I think if all things are equal, probably most likely you're going to see Nickerson start at the slot next year, and you're hoping that that's going to pan out. And maybe the Jets bring in a cheap veteran for competition, but I think the hope is probably that Perry Nickerson ends up winning that job. Our next question, how have you been? I've been great, thank you. That's really nice. It's nice that my listeners care about that. They care about how I've been. So thank you for asking that. Next question, worst case scenario. Bosa goes 1, Allen goes 2, and the Jets can't find a trade partner. What do you do? Well, I think you have to try. I think you have to try and move heaven and earth to trade down. But your question is kind of boxing me in there, because your question is, what do you do if you can't trade down? And I have to say, worst case scenario means I have the third pick in the draft, so it's not that nightmarish. It's not what I want, but it's not like it's a horrible situation that I have to hold the third pick in the draft. Now I'm going to give you an answer that I think is going to be unpopular. I think at that point, you'd have to look at taking Quinnen Williams from Alabama, and people would go nuts because you'd be taking another interior type lineman after Quinton Coples and Muhammad Wilkerson and Sheldon Richardson and Leonard Williams. I mean, how many interior linemen can you take in one decade? But I think at that point you have to look at where the talent is. And unfortunately, the board does not match up with, you know, your ideal positions. It doesn't match up with edge. It doesn't match up with offensive talent. It doesn't match up with offensive line. You can't, you know, as much as I think you should prioritize, if all things are equal, those positions, at some point you have to draft the board that's in front of you, not the board you wish was in front of you. And at that point, I think the talent disparity may be so great that Quinnen Williams is the right guy. And in drafting Quinnen Williams, it may be a double whammy. You know, you may end up improving two spots because now suddenly you have Williams and Williams at defensive tackle. You have two guys, Leonard Williams and Quinnen Williams, on your interior defensive line. So you're adding a top flight talent in Quinnen Williams. But that also might be what Leonard Williams needs to unlock his game, because suddenly maybe he'll see less double teams. Maybe he'll be able to dominate, use his power more, and not just get that quote-unquote hidden production, but actually start producing some big sack numbers with maybe Quinnen Williams drawing more double teams. I mean, this is a very talented guy, and at some point, you know, the fact that you've drafted this many interior defensive linemen doesn't make a difference, because most of them are gone. Outside of Leonard Williams, they're all gone anyway. Who cares that you drafted Coples in 2012 or Wilkerson in 2011 or Sheldon in 2013? Those guys are all gone. And I think in this league, you know, you might start to see a bit of a shift where you see teams try and acquire more interior-type pass rushers as teams try and figure out how to slow down these run-pass options. You know, maybe you'll see teams try and find guys who can help them collapse the pocket a little bit, draw double teams, and maybe let their linebackers sit back on the passing routes of the RPOs. Let the defensive linemen dominate against the run. Maybe that's the shift that we'll start seeing. And I'm just speculating there. There's the Leonard Williams pick. I go back to that. It was very controversial because the Jets had Wilkerson and Richardson at the time. They even had Coples, although Coples was kind of sort of on his way out then. Even looking back on it now, people say, well, that was the bad pick because they had these defensive linemen. And I really don't agree with that, because if you look at what's happened since, I mean, Wilkerson and Richardson both punched their own tickets out of town. And I really don't think Leonard Williams had a lot to do with it. In Wilkerson's case, he just got paid and stopped producing and stopped showing up to meetings on time. And in Richardson's case, there were issues. It seemed like there were issues in the locker room. It seemed like there certainly were a few things that happened off the field that I think made the Jets a little hesitant to give him money. I don't think either of those guys ended up on their way out of town because of Leonard Williams. And I don't think the problem with Leonard Williams was the position. I just think the production hasn't been there to justify the pick that they invested in him. So I think, you know, even though it's not the ideal position, I think Quinnen Williams is a guy I'd look at. And again, maybe he's what you need to unlock Leonard Williams and actually get Leonard Williams to start producing like what you thought he'd be. Because, I mean, he was supposed to be the next superstar in the league, and it hasn't happened. So maybe that'll help move things up in the right direction a little bit. Next question, roster makeup. How many special teams guys do you keep on the 53, not counting punter, kicker, or long snapper? At what point does a special teams hit also need to provide positional value as well? Seems the Jets carry 5 to 6 guys who provide no depth at positions but do at special teams. Well, I think the question is a little more complex than that because, you know, some guys may provide no position. It's tough to find good depth players in this league who provide value at their position, and it's relatively easy to find guys who can fill in on special teams. So I'm not sure it's necessarily all by design that the Jets are just sacrificing roster spots on offense or defense just to find special teamers. I think what you are looking for is, I want all of my guys on the roster who are backups to fit one of two voids. Either one, they're a quality backup today and they provide depth, or two, they're a young guy with upside. And in the meantime, while you're waiting, while you're sitting on the bench as a backup, or as you're trying to develop in practice, in the meantime, you help the team out on special teams. Let me give you an example of a guy who I don't think fits what the Jets need to do anymore, and that's like guy Rontez Miles, who is a good special teamer, but he's kind of fallen. You know, he kind of fell out of the safety rotation, and new coaching staff, so who knows what happens. But he kind of fell out of the safety rotation. He started being used only on special teams, and he's kind of old. He's not ancient, but he's not that young anymore. So that's the type of guy who I think, you know, is if you're only going to be special teamer and you're 30 years old, the way like Miles is, and he'll turn 31 during the season, that's this point where I don't see where you fit. If you're a good backup, okay, you can stay and you can work on special teams. If you're a young player who's trying to find his way, you know, trying to develop, you're a developmental guy, you're trying to turn into a good player, you're not there yet, and you can contribute on special teams, okay, then you can stay. You know, I'm not a big believer, though, in the older specialist, so to say, the guy who only works on special teams who gives you nothing. That I'm not a big guy on, unless you're like a superstar guy, like, and I'm going to show my age here, like a Steve Tasker back in the Bills glory days. That's the type of guy, you know, unless you're just like a superstar special teamer, then I don't think you can only be, I'm not a big believer in keeping a guy only in a special teams role. Next question, over under Jets primetime games in 2019, 1.5. Now we know they're going to get one because everybody gets a Thursday night game. So, and I'm assuming it's going to be a Miami game. It'll probably be Gase against his old team. So I think that'll be one. I'm going to go over though. I'm not sure they're getting the Sunday night game, but I think they'll probably get a Monday night game or two in there because of the New York market, because of Sam, the new coaching staff. I mean, I think this team will. I think the issue with the Jets getting primetime games in the past is just they've seemed kind of hopeless. You know, there were years where they seemed kind of hopeless. I mean, last year, you know, with Sam around, they got the opening Monday night game of the year. So, you know, they were primetime two times in the first 3 weeks. So I'd imagine with Sam Darnold, there'll be a game intriguing enough to get a Monday nighter in there. So I'm going to take the over on that one. That's all for our show today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you like the show, subscribe, iTunes or Spotify, and leave the show a good review in iTunes if you do enjoy it. Have a wonderful Thursday, everybody, and we'll be back again tomorrow. We'll close out the week by talking some draft.